what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Hotshot Wake Up. Happy Memorial Day weekend. This is usually the time of year where we see a lot of human caused starts in the United States, just because we have a lot of families out and about, camping, having picnics, maybe some fireworks are involved with some alcohol, and folks just don't think about wildfire danger as much as they would. And there's just a massive influx of people out in the woods. So just a heads up with that, if you are going out and celebrating, I know I am tomorrow, there's a picnic that we're going to go have a good time at. But just be aware that if you're in an area that's dry and you got some fireworks and folks are running around, that this is the time of year that those things start. However, that being said, this is one of the slowest wildfire season starts in recent memory. We're looking at over the 10-year average, one of the slowest, and could possibly be the slowest wildfire season in well over a decade. And that's just because of all the precipitation we've seen and ongoing precipitation that we're seeing in the Southwest, out in California and other places. It doesn't mean there's not potential for wildfire around the United States. Right now in the northern states, Michigan, Minnesota, they have some severe wildfire danger, and they're actually bringing in some hotshot crews at this point in time. Madewin's been moved up north in Michigan. Ruby Mountain hotshots are headed to Minnesota, and I wouldn't be surprised if more come, especially if there are some starts. But this kind of has to go with one of the topics we're going to speak about today here in the first segment, dealing with insurance in California. State Farm Insurance came out yesterday and said we are no longer going to insure new homes in California. They will continue doing existing insurance coverage on people who have had insurance on homes that they've already owned. But when it comes to new homes, they've come out and said that due to what they're calling the climate crisis, they are no longer going to insure new homes in California. And this made its rounds in all of the California papers. The Wall Street Journal did an article on it. And this is something that I predicted well over a year ago, and especially after listening to some congressional testimony from people in the insurance industry, some think tanks, people from the universities out in California. They were saying this as well and said, hey, at some point in time, you're not going to be able to insure a home in California. And then you're going to have a mass exodus of people from the rural areas. And we're going to say that it's because of wildfire danger and this climate crisis. So State Farm, the largest insurer in California, I believe, said that they are no longer going to insure new home builds. And they specifically say due to wildfires and the climate crisis as their reasoning. There's other reasons as well, which don't get as much coverage in the media, which is just the rising costs of goods for rebuilding a home if it is destroyed. And the inflation that's going on, that's also cutting into the bottom line of these insurance companies as well. But instead of saying, hey, we aren't going to provide insurance anymore for new homes because it's too expensive because of inflation, they're saying it's because of wildfires and the climate crisis. We'll dive into that article. It's really good. There's some good comments from people out in California and the government who are discussing this topic. And we've talked about this and covered in depth that we saw this coming. In the Inflation Reduction Act that came out, there was, I believe it was like $380 million, maybe it was $350 million. That was specifically for reducing the population in wildland urban interface areas due to effects on the environment and things like that. And then you wrap that into congressional testimony, and you kind of get a picture of what's coming. And that's why I was able to, more than a year ago, say, hey, you're not going to be able to insure a home in California here in the next couple of years. And then you have these people who are housing market experts who were speaking in Congress as well. And they're saying, yeah, this is coming. And what will happen is it'll drive all the poor people out. And then since you can't insure a home, only cash buyers can come in and buy a home and afford to live in these areas. And you just start tying all these pieces together, and it becomes pretty easy to see that unless someone stands up and says, hey, we don't like the way this is going, that it's pretty clear that this is the way that it's going to go. We're also going to talk about the new night vision capabilities of these Ericsson Sky Cranes. That's a huge story. If you are a wildland firefighter, you know how useful it would be if you could just have a sky crane overhead 24 hours a day and working in the nighttime. So you 1,000 gallons, 3,000 gallons of water coming down and fighting fire when it's the most mellow at night. And for the longest time, we haven't been able to do this because of restrictions for night flying and night operations. But that is changing, and we're going to cover that story as well. Huge story when it comes to suppression tactics and what we're able to utilize during those night shifts on the wildfire line. But first, it's going to be brief, but we're going to talk about what's going on in the nation with wildfires. Not much. It's a preparedness level 2 nationwide. There were 85 new fires in the last 24 hours. Only one new large incident. They have the southern area on top, but I'm here to tell you, they have the Great Lakes fire in North Carolina still is the number one fire in the southern area. This fire is, they say it's 90% contained. This fire has been out for a long time. They're just doing some repair and rehab work on it at this point. But if that's your number one fire, it's kind of shocking as we roll into June. As I said, it's one of the slowest starts in a decade or more. And it also, what's shocking is no one's covering that. Like, you're not seeing any of the mainstream news say, oh, hey, look how great this is. We have the slowest wildfire start in over a decade. And this is after 10 years of them scaring the pants off of everybody, saying that the entire country is going to burn down. So I think, you know, if you're a wildland firefighter, sure, you're chomping at the bit and you want to get out. And that's why we have sent hundreds of people up to Canada to help fight their fires. But you're chomping at the bit if you're in the United States wondering when this is all going to kick off, because that's what you do for a living. There's a lot of prescribed burning going on around the nation, which we'll briefly talk about as well. But when it comes to residents and people who are concerned about this, and we have a guest next week coming on, Dr. Melinda Adams, and it's a great conversation. You should tune in on the Substack for that conversation. But we briefly talk about what she has been seeing in her students, which she is calling environmental grief, which is the media is saying, you know, there's this climate crisis, climate change going on, and these students, these young people, start getting depressed, like clinically depressed because of their thoughts on what's happening to our planet. And, you know, that's obviously a problem. Depression across the United States and across the world has skyrocketed since the pandemic. Those numbers are out there, and I think it's pretty well known at this point in time. Suicide rates are through the roof. But when you get a piece of good news that could probably help calm some of this stuff, which is, hey, in the United States, it's the slowest wildfire season in over a decade, you think that some folks would report on that because a lot of people would consider that good news. But instead, you have insurance companies saying we're not going to insure new homes anymore because the crisis is so bad. It's just a little side note that I thought is interesting. It's interesting to see what the media reports on when it comes to wildfire and what the media decides not to report on when it comes to wildfire. And I've said for a long time that there's gatekeepers everywhere. In every industry there is. It's just the way it is. I understand that. But there's gatekeepers in the wildfire world too. And certain stories get out and certain stories don't. And you know, you talk about certain things and people come out of the woodwork and they're like, yo, why are you talking about that? I just find it fascinating, but I'm going to talk about it. It's slow. Don't shoot the messenger, but it's just the way it is. But roundabout point, the Great Lakes fire in North Carolina is the number one fire in the southern area. And that says a lot because that fire has been out for a while. They did have 23 new fires in the last 24 hours, but these are small fires. You know, fires down in Florida and these other places. But at this point in time, not a whole lot of significant activity. The Great Lakes fire is approaching $11 million in cost. That major fire down in Florida is approaching $5 million in cost. They have almost 300 people on that fire. So that thing, it's 95% contained, but they have a lot of people still working that fire. Then when you move down to the southwest area, they're at a PL2 as well. The only one that's significant down there is this Pass fire. It's a lightning-caused fire on the Gila National Forest. It's just north of Silver City, New Mexico. and they're kind of just letting it do its thing. It's almost 8,000 acres at this point in time. Not a lot of people, 34 plus, you know, approaching a little bit more people. They had a Type 3 team take over, and they're going to let it do its thing. They've have a proposed box that they're going to let it burn into, and ultimately, maybe they'll need a couple more resources down there to help manage this thing. But at this point in time, it's the only significant fire in the Southwest. There are some red flag warnings and fire weather this weekend down in Arizona. And with Memorial Day weekend, maybe we'll see some activity come out of that. But that's yet to be seen, and we'll have to watch that as the days go by. Oregon and Washington had a couple smaller fires up in the Northwest area. They had a Dillon Creek fire, which was 1,300 acres. Current cost $251,000, being managed by the Forest Service. And then they had this Tower Road fire in Washington. That thing's been contained, did cost $125,000. Sizable, it was 2,750 acres. But again, they were able to wrap that thing up pretty quick. Last on the list, Alaska had a couple fires. Again, nothing huge, couple hundred-acre fires. 310-acre fire was this Barley Way fire in the Delta area. If I remember correctly, they sent a couple van loads of jumpers out there. And I know Chena and Midnight Sun Hotshots got on a fire as well, but were able to wrap that up pretty quick. Folks up in Alaska, I've been talking to them. They're saying they're about a week out is their prediction. They think they're about a week out from wildfire season truly popping off up there. And at that point in time, we'll see. Oregon did send a crew up to Alaska just this last week. I believe it was 19 or 20 people that they sent up to that state for pre-position and helping out with any IAs. So they're getting ready for that as well. But at this point, the places to watch for wildfire activity, probably Minnesota and Michigan and parts of Arizona at this point in time. Once we start diving into June, watch Oregon. They are probably going to have a pretty big fire season, and Idaho as well, but they still have some drying. They still need grasses to cure out. They do have a pretty healthy grass crop above Pocatello and those types of areas, the more desert areas of Idaho. But again, we'll just have to wait and see what comes out of all of that. That's your weekly wildfire update. There's not a whole lot, as we said, but we're still just gearing up. Come June, it might be a total and complete different story, but we'll see once that rolls through. I'd like to take this time to thank all the paid Substack subscribers. Everything that I do is made possible through these subscriptions to our Substack. If you want to visit that, it's thehotshotwakeup.substack.com. Click on the subscribe button. It's just $6. Like I said, we have great guests coming up. We have a new addition to the Soup series with Hotshot Superintendents coming up. We are interviewing Dr. Melinda Adams next week, so tune into that one. That's going to be out next Tuesday on the Substack. And when it comes to firefighter donations, all of our giveaways, having access to the podcast and article archives, that's all made available to you through a Substack subscription. Again, it's thehotshotwakeup.substack.com. Click on subscribe, just $6. We're 100% ad-free, 100% sponsorship-free, and are 100% supported through the community. So thank you very much for that support.
I have traveled this year over all the United States, through the Alleghenies, the White Mountains, and the Catskills, the Rockies and the Bitterroot Mountains, the Cascades, the Coast Range, and the Sierras. I have traveled.
So if you've been listening to the show for a while now, this shouldn't really come as any major surprise, because I predicted that this was coming. It was clear through congressional testimony that this was coming. It was clear through realtors who were speaking and the insurance companies themselves. And that is insurance in California and the problems that they're having with it due to wildfire. And just this week, in the last 24 hours, State Farm Insurance came out and said, we will no longer insure new homes in California. And they specifically say because of severity of wildfires, climate crisis, and other things. Lower on the list is their comments on inflation and the cost of building materials, so on and so forth. But again, if you've been listening, this shouldn't be a surprise because I knew this was coming simply because they've been telling us now. They have been. If you listen to what the people in charge say, they were hinting that this was coming for a very long time. And it's through a bunch of pieces of legislation and congressional testimony that this was able to be pieced together. I did podcasts on it. I've written articles on it. Caught a lot of flack for it. People were saying they will not stop insuring houses in California. Stop it, Tim. That's ridiculous. Stop being so foolish saying that this is going to happen. Well, it happened. And the largest insurer in California said, hey, if you build a new house, we're not going to insure it because of wildfires and the environmental crisis that's happening. Now, that being said, as I said at the top of the show, this is the slowest wildfire season in upwards of a decade. So keep that in mind as we go through this. This article is from the OC Register, written by Samantha Gowen. It's entitled State Farm Halts New Property Insurance Policies in California. State Farm said Friday, May 26th, that it will stop accepting new applications for property and casualty insurance in California, citing the climate crisis and rising inflation. They're also saying that the company feels as though they are rapidly growing catastrophe exposure of new insurance policies. The policy change for personal and business lines is effective Saturday, May 27th. So today, it's in effect as of today. In a statement, the company said it would work with the California Department of Insurance to restore its market capacity in the state. Quote, we take seriously our responsibility to manage risk, the company wrote. However, it's necessary to take these actions now to improve the company's financial strength. Very interesting. So it sounds like State Farm Insurance is in financial trouble and they're blaming it on wildfires and a climate crisis and the rising costs of replacing homes. Folks, there's a big issue going on in our country right now with large companies, banks, and even our government, which is about to default on their loans as well. Something to keep an eye on. This is big time stuff. This is a huge company pulling out of the market. It says State Farm holds the largest share of property and casualty insurance policies in the United States and controls about 8.3% of California's market, writing at least $7 billion in premiums, according to 2021 data. Michael Soler, spokesperson for California's Department of Insurance, said Friday evening via email that the policy change by State Farm was among factors beyond our control, including climate change, wildfires, and global inflation costs. Instead, the DOI is focusing on protecting consumers through its Safer from Wildfires discount program, Soler said. Now, we've talked about this program before. California, I think, saw this coming, as I did. It was pretty clear, if you're paying attention, that this is the way the insurance companies were going to go. It was almost incentivized at this point in time. But they saw it coming, and they saw it as a problem. So they set up these programs to try to buffer the impact of what was coming, saying, hey, you have to provide, you know, affordable costs. You have to provide discounts for people who make their properties wildfire ready, and you can't cancel existing policies. But State Farm has gone as close as you can to that, and they said, all right, well, we're just not going to do new policies. Folks, the largest insurance company in the United States just said we will no longer insure new homes because of wildfires, climate crisis, and rising inflation. The largest insurance company in the United States. It's huge news. That being said, the Department of Insurance in California saw this coming, and they were trying to help. It looks like they were trying to help and wasn't going to be just this blunt change that was going to really shock the system. It says that this program was established in October 2022. We reported on this program when it came out and touted as the first of its kind. The state program requires insurance providers to discount policies for property owners who mitigate wildfire threats by installing fire-rated roofs, enclosing eaves, and creating ember-resistant zones. Insurance companies have 180 days to submit a wildfire risk assessment or score, which the state can then appeal. Now, in our reporting back in October on this, we were talking about how Oregon was kind of leaning towards the same thing. And this was after their wildfire risk maps came out, and property owners were like, yo, this is wildly incorrect, and we got problems, and we're afraid that our insurance companies are going to pull our policies. And so we predicted that Oregon was going to kind of see the same thing. So now all eyes on Oregon to see what insurance companies do up there and how they're going to handle this same sort of event if insurance companies continue to do this. And ultimately, that was my prediction, was it would start in California and then you would see it spread through the western United States, Oregon, Washington, Utah, Idaho, Montana, and you would start seeing these states lose insurance companies with the excuse that wildfires are too bad and the coming climate emergency is making insurance too expensive and ultimately driving people out of rural areas. And the only people who would be able to afford to live there would be very wealthy people who could just buy homes for cash, because you can't take out a home loan on a home that's unable to be insured, because the bank wants to make sure that they have some sort of backstop if something happens to that property and they have a loan out on it. This is why it's such a big deal. The article continues saying property insurers in recent years have pulled coverage from tens of thousands of homeowners across the state in the wake of devastating wildfires. Department of Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara in September 2022 invoked a law signed in 2018 by then Governor Jerry Brown, prohibiting insurance providers from canceling or refusing to renew plans for properties affected by wildfires until 12 months after the fire. So, if you have a wildfire in your area in California, there is now a law in place that says your insurance company can't pull your insurance policy immediately after the wildfire. But after 1 year's time, they can then pull that insurance policy. So they delayed it for 1 year. And folks, this is going to snowball. It's clear as day. If you go back and listen to the congressional testimony of all these subject matter experts that they have in, they spend an hour talking about this, saying that this is going to be devastating for the real estate market. It's going to be devastating for the insurance market. It's going to push people out of rural areas. And it's here. This new policy goes into effect today. A moratorium on insurance price increases during the pandemic only heightened tension within the insurance industry. So, because of the pandemic, they put a cap on raising insurance rates on homes. The insurance industry is now paying out policies on inflationary costs of homes that did continue to rise throughout the pandemic. And they've gotten to a point where they're like, hey, we can't operate like this anymore. They're in financial trouble, and so they've stopped insuring homes. It's a giant snowball that's cruising down the hill, folks. It says risks are getting worse, and rates are going to have to go up to ensure insurers are solvent and operational in California, said Saren Taylor, a senior legislative advocate for the Personal Insurance Federation of California. Lara, in 2019, ordered California's FAIR plan, an insurance plan of last resort, to expand its coverage beyond fire to include liability, theft, and other parts of homeowners' policies. Insurance companies which manage and fund the state-created FAIR plan have challenged the newer rules in court. In March this year, FAIR plan administrators agreed to double the plan's commercial coverage limits to $20 million for businesses such as homeowners associations that were unable to find insurance through traditional providers. The number of California properties facing severe wildfire risk is expected to grow sixfold in 30 years, according to the nonprofit First Street Foundation. Now, again, if you're a listener, you know who First Street Foundation is. They are the government-mandated provider for wildfire risk maps. And we have been told over and over and over by First Street and the government that, hey, we're not going to use these wildfire risk maps for the purpose of determining insurance rates or who does and who doesn't get insured. Okay. Now, we have the largest home insurer in the nation saying we're no longer going to insure homes in California, new homes in California, because of wildfire risk and the climate crisis. And we're also told at the end of this article in the Wall Street Journal and others that First Street Foundation's wildfire map is saying that it's only going to get worse and therefore insurance policies are going to get worse. Are we connecting the dots here, folks? It seems pretty clear that this is going to continue. And the only way to have it not continue is to have people get vocal about it and talk about it. I know there might be people on both sides of the fence here. There may be listeners who are like, yo, yeah, people shouldn't live in rural areas because of wildfire risk. And there's other people who are like, you should be able to live wherever you want as long as you pay for that property and you maintain it. That's the side I'm on. I'm a huge advocate of personal property rights. But no matter what side of the fence you're on, this is a pretty glaring new development that's come out of the insurance world. And it's probably going to move on to different states. It's probably not just going to stay in California, simply because if you look at State Farm, they operate all over the United States. They're the largest. One thing you don't see in these articles is, you know, a comment by the author or whoever, a note by the editor that says, while insurance companies are saying they have to stop insuring new homes because of wildfires, 2023 happens to be the slowest wildfire season in 10 plus years. Another thing I would like to know, and we talk about this with our guests on these interviews we have on our Substack, again, thehotshotwakeup.substack.com, is how often are these wildfire risk maps going to be updated? Now that California has received record rainfall and all of their reservoirs have completely filled back up to the top in just 5 months' time, snowpacks in the Tahoe area, upwards of 300% the normal snowpack. Are these wildfire risk maps being updated with that new data? Or is it a solid data set that's just there telling us that the wildfire risk is still extreme? And I can't, you know, reiterate this enough. These are government mandated wildfire risk maps. The Council on Environmental Quality, which is an executive branch council, mandated that First Street Foundation's map be used specifically for the purpose of divvying out funds for climate emergency payments. And we're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars. There's a gal who hit me up. She's a university student. We had probably about a 35-minute conversation. And that interview might come out later. We're working through a few things before anything like that gets put out. But it's been recorded and it's a great interview. And she's working on this question, which is, who's using these risk maps? Who made them? How often are they updated? Where is the money going? Are there money connections? And all of these really important questions. And this isn't some, you know, schlup off the street putting together this paper. And this is, it's like a scientific research paper. This is a very intelligent, smart woman who goes to a very prestigious university, who's working on these things. And, has been calling around asking for people in the industry's opinions on what these things are. And we had a discussion. I know who she's been talking to, and these are very smart people that she's talking to. And I'm looking forward to that paper coming out because it is a big, big deal. And these are big questions that need to be asked. Most specifically, the one we spent the most time on is just that question of how often are these things updated? Are we updating them after we have a huge precipitation, you know, season? If snowpacks are 280 to 325% above normal, are we updating the maps for that area? If we're being told the insurance companies can't use these maps, What happens if insurance companies are looking at these maps, make decisions, but then say, well, we didn't use the map to make those decisions. We just have to stop insuring new homes because wildfires. It's a very interesting topic. Again, we shouldn't be surprised because the folks who have been speaking on this to Congress and in universities have been saying this is coming. And it, like I said, it's almost been incentivized. And I harp on this a lot, but it's important is that UN report that came out last year on the future of wildfire, catastrophic wildfire in a global crisis, or it's named something like that. I've posted this link to this 78-page report multiple times, and they talk about all this stuff as well. You know, it's going to be more difficult to live in rural areas. It's going to be more difficult to insure these things. There's going to be problems that arise because of catastrophic wildfire, so on and so forth. All in all, a very important issue. And we'll see how far this goes and where they take it, because I'm not going to say it's a runaway train yet, but it does seem that there is at least no conductor currently in the engine, and it's still going down the tracks at this point, and all of the railroad crossings are still working, but there's a lot of weight behind the momentum of all of this, and we'll have to see ultimately where this continues to go.
I have traveled this year over all the United States, through the Alleghenies, the White Mountains, and the Catskills, the Rockies and the Bitterroot Mountains, the Cascades, the Coast Range, and the Sierras. I have traveled.
Lastly on today's show, it's some big news coming out of the suppression world when it comes to helicopter operations during the nighttime, specifically with sky cranes. And this is direct right from the Ericsson Helicopters website. No, this is not a sponsored segment. I just find it very, very interesting because there's been a lot of folks who have been wondering when this was finally going to be implemented. And in California, you have some Chinooks that have been able to fly during nighttime, but we haven't seen them used a whole lot. You know, there was some controversy with the Calder fire where these things were ordered, but then they just sat on the tarmac. And then the owner operator of these helicopters were like, hey, if you're not going to use us for the purpose of why you ordered us, which is nighttime operations, we're going to just pull them out of here. And they didn't get a lot of coverage, but it was an internal battle that took place between Cal Fire and the Forest Service saying, are you even going to use these things? Because they're costing a tremendous amount of money just to sit on the ground, but also we could use them elsewhere. But these programs are expanding, and now these sky cranes are looking like they're going to be able to fly at night. The article is Ericsson S64 is now FAA certified for night vision goggle operations. New integrated NVG program offers invaluable operational flexibility while prioritizing safety. All right, let's dive into this. It says an Ericsson Incorporated air crane helicopter was certified by the Federal Aviation Administration for night vision goggle operations in April. The approval is a key component of Ericsson's integrated NVG program, which aims to offer customer increased flexibility and expanded operation capabilities. This added proficiency presents the opportunity for increased tactical planning and agility in aerial firefighting operations. A critical element of Ericsson's night vision goggle program is ensuring that the NVG flight crew maintained currency in accordance with current FAA regulations. Though it is the policy of Ericsson Training Department that pilots exceed the minimum requirements to maintain a high level of proficiency, Ericsson conducted NVG training in accordance with this policy and its annual spring training in Oregon. That was probably some pretty cool training to be a part of. As part of the currency flights, prior to conducting operational training, flight crews completed helicopter night vision goggle operations in accordance with the FAA regulations. Upon completion of those activities, the flight crews initiated their night firefighting training. During the training, they performed a variety of drops using multiple coverage level options, a variety of filling techniques performed in the S-64, including a ground fill, a pond snorkel hover release into an open water source hover fill, as well as a tank fill operation. Okay, so they landed the helicopter and filled it, then they hovered over a pond and filled it, and then they hovered over a portable tank and filled it, all with night vision goggles on. So multi options when it comes to these night operations with these Ericsson Sky Cranes. I'm curious if how fast this is going to be implemented in wildfires this year. Because this is huge. If you can just slang buckets all night long, that can have a very, very large impact on suppressing a wildfire. It says that this was a multi-agency event with the FAA and the U.S. Forest Service on site observing the training. In addition, the Crook County Fire Department was also on site providing the ground fill for the S-64 tank and simultaneously conducting required helicopter coordination training and sign-offs. So they had folks on the ground talking to these helicopters, probably helping direct the drops as well for the on-the-ground proficiency as well. Regarding Ericsson's night vision goggle capabilities, ASU Director of Operation Tony Sansels commented, "I had the pleasure of working with Ericsson pilots personally. They are professional and prepared to conduct operations around the clock now. That is exciting not only for themselves, but for their customers as well." Ericsson's approach to the night vision goggle program development demonstrates the company's safety-first mentality. Program participants were able to operate outside a fixed timetable, which resulted in the removal of any perceived pressures and allowed for optimal coordination, planning, and risk mitigation. Ericsson's recent dedication to developing a comprehensive night vision goggle program is fueled by feedback from long-term customers, coupled with the commitment to remain at the forefront of aerial firefighting technology and current industry trajectories. Quote, "Ericsson's historical strategy has been to ask customers what they want and then work on to make it happen. Our goal with the NVG program will be to continue implementing the program while soliciting customer feedback to determine where potential for enhancement exists." So a huge step forward when it comes to night shift, night operations on wildfires. Also, I see this expanding the pilot program. So if you fly all day, you obviously have to swap out pilots, but now you're able to fly at night. So that's expanded operations. This could enhance and increase the amount of pilots that work and are needed throughout the day for wildfire suppression operations. Like we said before, there are Chinooks in California already doing this, but this is adding to that capability and that arsenal of water-capable drops during nighttime. There has long been, you know, a taboo, especially in the Forest Service, about using aircraft during night. And there's been this huge push to incorporate drones to expand these nighttime operations and what we're capable of completing in that aerial suppression realm when it comes to nighttime operations. But this just adds to the toolbox that's available to fire managers, wildland firefighters on the ground, to continue the fight into the nighttime. There's a lot of times where, you know, aerial operations are shut down right as the fire is about to slope reverse and make an uphill run into a community during the nighttime. And you know, when you have to shut down helicopters, there's something called pumpkin time. It's basically when the sun goes down. And once pumpkin time hits, you have to shut down aircraft and you're trying to squeeze in as much as you can. And hey, can we get our sling loads up to the spike camps in time before pumpkin time? Like, well, no, well, we got bucket operations going on and we're going to do that to try to suppress the fire. So you're not going to get your supplies tonight. Ultimately, this expands that window. So maybe you can prioritize a Type 3, Type 2 ship to do some crew transport and supply missions before pumpkin time, knowing that you have, you know, if you're in California, some Chinooks and really anywhere in the United States now for these sky cranes. And you say, hey, well, we got the sky cranes. They can operate at night. So let's shut down the Type 3, Type 2s, take off the bucket, and let's start slinging nets up until pumpkin time to get everybody their gear and their supplies. Pretty great development. I'd like to see it utilized. There's going to be critics. If there's, God forbid, an accident, there's going to be a lot of critics. And you'll hear it endlessly about how bad of an idea this was and so on and so forth. But if that does happen, we got to remember accidents happen all the time. Last year was one of the largest aviation accident years in wildland fire. We covered that extensively, and that was without nighttime operations. So it's a dangerous job as is, but you got to weigh these benefits. You got to weigh these pros and cons list when it comes to what can we get done, what can't we get done, and what is operationally feasible in this time window that we have. And there's these time wedges that we talk about, and with these time wedges closing, there's less and less that you can do. But ultimately, programs like this expand that time wedge and expand the operational window that's available during these wildfire incidents. So, very interesting stuff. I'm curious where this first operation will take place, and hopefully they'll make it public. I'm sure Erickson will talk about it, because that's actually pretty big milestone, is once they're operational and actually doing these nighttime missions on a wildfire. And we'll cover that when it comes out, because, again, that's a pretty monumental thing. And the quiet good news, again, out of this might expand the options for pilots, and you might double the amount of pilots that you have running these things simply because you can now operate 24 hours a day. You might even have to hire more mechanics because you're putting in more flight hours on these machines. Very, very interesting stuff. Hey, that does it for the show today. Again, thank you to the paid Substack subscribers, the free subscribers as well. You guys share everything that I put out on the Substack. I really appreciate that. It's become a massive community, and I really thank you for supporting me in these efforts and on this journey with the Hotshot Wake Up. If you want to participate in that, support everything I do, go to the hotshotwakeup.substack.com, click on that subscribe button, and just $6 supports everything that I do. If you can't afford the $6, become a free subscriber and just like and share the things that I put out, and spread the good word with Wildland Fire. Quickly, before I go, we talked about on the Substack show earlier on Wednesday about the debt ceiling and what was going to happen with that. And I'll make this quick. They're still trying to work out a deal. The National Federation of Federal Employees put out a statement saying, we've been talking to the White House and we're not getting really any answers on what's happening with this. And they're concerned about payments going out to all their federal employees, not just wildland firefighters. We're talking, you know, nurses and military people and even contractors, and including wildland firefighters. But they seemed pretty frustrated. The president of the NFFE gave a speech saying, hey, yeah, we hear you. We're as frustrated as you are because we're not getting any answers. But at this point in time, it sounds like there might be a deal before the weekend's over. We don't know what that deal is. We don't know what that deal incorporates. But this is what the talking heads in D.C. are saying. So maybe by Monday morning, we'll know if our country is going to default or not, and if paychecks are going to keep going out, or if we're all going to run around like chickens with our heads cut off screaming and saying, what is going on? What is going on? But as usual, they'll probably have a last minute 11th hour deal, and then we'll all have to pick through the 2,800 pages of information that they give to us at the last minute to figure out what the hell it actually is. But that's the update there. The update is they're still working on it, so we'll see. On that note, reach out to someone you haven't talked to in a while, see how they're doing, say what's up to your homies, get outside, exercise, enjoy the Memorial Day weekend, stretch, hydrate, make sure you're drinking water with those seltzers and those cocktails and beers that you're having this weekend, get that exercise, but also get that rest that you need to recover. And remember, when you get up, you got to get it done.
Yeah.